Here we are again, coming together as our little community this evening under lamplight, part of the larger community of Cambridge 105, community radio, as you know, in your city. I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, dutifully here for you, even though an ugly cough means that I don't trust myself to spend too much time this evening actually talking. We'll begin by attending to a short section from Whitman's Song of Myself, then sit back to enjoy a jazzy musical drama, and finally we'll have some Dr. Seuss to get ready for bedtime. It's an all-American show this week. But first, we turn to Walt Whitman. We're up to the 18th section of Song of Myself, a short passage celebrating the unity of winners and losers, all resonating in the same spirit. First, let's hear the passage. This is the trill of a thousand clear cornets, and scream of the octave flute, and strike of triangles. I play not a march for victors only, I play great marches for conquered and slain persons. Have you heard that it was good to gain the day? I also say it is good to fall. Battles are lost in the same spirit in which they are won. I sound triumphal drums for the dead. I fling through my embrasures the loudest and gayest music to them. Vivas to those who have failed, and to those whose war vessels sank in the sea, and those themselves who sank in the sea, and to all generals that lost engagements, and all overcome heroes, and the numberless unknown heroes equal to the greatest heroes known. We are not surprised to hear Whitman comparing his verse to a marching band, the thousand clear cornets, the scream of the octave flute, and the strike of triangles. Whitman's poetry usually feels like a marching band, loud, boisterous, marching its own way through the crowds. But what surprises us is that the march does not just celebrate the victors, our heroic conquerors, and so on, but it celebrates, with equal passion and devotion, those who have lost, who have been slain. He is here consciously marching against the commonplace American assumption that only the winners are worth attending to. Those who have lost are losers. It's their own fault. Serve them right. Blaming them for their defeat means we can safely ignore them and need not extend our heart to them. But all wise voices tell us that it is through loss, specifically that loss of ego, that we come to what is truly worth having. Whitman's heart is drawn to those who have lost, the underdogs, the victims, and he confronts us with his direct challenge. Have you heard that it was good to gain the day? I also say it is good to fall. Battles are lost in the same spirit in which they are won. Well, that's puzzling. In what way are battles lost in the same spirit in which they are won? What spirit is shared by both winner and loser engaged in battle, whether we're talking about actual armed conflict or the little battles of life like driving to work or preparing a meal or quieting our minds so we can hear the world around us? Perhaps it's the spirit of brotherhood, standing side by side with allies, or that other kind of brotherhood, a kind of unity with the enemy, whom we can respect as a worthy foe. Those people who have to turn their enemies into demons do not, I think, share in the kind of spirit Whitman is talking about. Perhaps it's the spirit of grim determination that both winners and losers share together and that must be celebrated equally. Whitman, we see, is judging not by outcomes, which are beside the point, but by the spirit of engagement. And so Whitman shouts, "Viva!" to all overcome heroes and the numberless unknown heroes equal to the greatest heroes known. We have to bring these lines to life by thinking of examples. What overcome and unknown heroes do we know? How about our friend who has just been dumped by her lover? In what way might she be equal to the greatest heroes known? Maybe that would depend on how strongly she had been engaged in the relationship. Yes, she has been overcome, but in that she is equal to Hector, for instance, who went out to face Achilles, knowing in his heart that he would be defeated, but knowing also that, as leader of the Trojans, he had to show his valor in battle. What about that person who is out of work and homeless, and for technical reasons, unable to connect to government assistance? Is he a loser to be dismissed? Or do we see him as a fellow human being trying to handle this battle of life in the same spirit as the one presenter who occupies his energies on political and financial schemes to stay firmly in power? Whitman would have us recognize both as fellow human beings to be celebrated equally, even as we deplore the actions of the one percenter and the conditions of the homeless person. If we can't celebrate both, we're missing the spirit of Walt Whitman with his marching band parade. This is the trill of 1,000 clear cornets and scream of the octave flute and strike of triangles. I play not a march for victors only. I play great marches for conquered and slain persons. Have you heard that it was good to gain the day? I also say it is good to fall. Battles are lost in the same spirit in which they are won. I sound triumphal drums for the dead. I fling through my embouchures the loudest and gayest music to them. Vivas to those who have failed, and to those whose war vessels sank in the sea, and those themselves who sank in the sea. And to all generals that lost engagements, and all overcome heroes, and the numberless unknown heroes equal to the greatest heroes known. Okay. Now, I have a feeling this might have been the first time John Philip Sousa's Stars and Stripes Forever has been played on Cambridge 105. Correct me if I'm wrong. But it just seemed to be the right kind of musical salute to all people that Whitman was conveying in his poetry. Note all those clear coronets, octave flutes, and triangles. From these 19th century celebrations, let's move on to the 20th century, to a dramatization of Don Marquis's Archie and Mehitable stories, which originally appeared in the daily columns Marquis wrote for New York newspapers from about 1912 through the 1920s and 30s. Archie is a free verse poet reincarnated as a cockroach, who produces his work by jumping on the keys of Marquis's typewriter after hours in the newspaper office. Archie is cynical about the world, but is serious, even moralistic, in his relationship with Mehitable. Mehitable is an alley cat. She hangs out in Shinbone Alley, who has been around and been used, whose heart has been broken 1,000 times, and whose body is wearing out. But there's life in the old dame yet, as announced in her refrain, toujours gay, always partying. The story dramatizes Archie's awakening from a kind of uptight admiration of conventional respectability into an enjoyment of the free, toujours gay, bohemian life of the streets, or rather the alleys. What we're going to hear now is a musical version of Archie and Mehitable, recorded in 1953 and 54. George Kleinsinger's jazzy swing music catches a kind of noir feeling for the piece, with Eddie Bracken as a melancholy streetwise Archie and Carol Channing just right as the vampish Mehitable. The drama goes on for nearly half an hour, so sit back and attend to the words and music and ambiance.
Have you ever seen an empty newspaper office at night? How cold and dark and still it is. The moon pokes through the dirty windows and hunts in the corners for the ghosts of old, forgotten stories. But some stories never grow old and cannot be forgotten. In this dark, deserted room on a night long ago, such a story began. Even now I see it all so clearly. The battered desk, the muted telephones, a vagrant moonbeam touching the dusty littered floor. Then suddenly, what's that? Sounds like an old typewriter, clacking away in the empty room. See on that desk in the corner? Why, it's a little cockroach dancing on the keys of the typewriter. Time after time, he climbs up on the framework and dives headfirst onto a key. And the impact of the blow is just enough to operate the letters. For an hour, he works at fever heat. Then he falls exhausted into the wastebasket and wipes his fevered brow with a limp antenna. And the result of his heavy literary labor reads as follows.
I am only a poor humble cockroach, but creative expression is the need of my soul. I'm little and I'm ugly and everybody sneers at me. But I'm a poet and my heart holds a flame. Leave a paper in the typewriter every night and I will write your stories for you. I don't want any credit or any salary. All I ask is the right to create my immortal poetry.
Leave some apple peelings in the wastebasket too, boss. You can call me Archie.
So begins the most amazing career in newspaper history. I ought to know it was my typewriter that was used that fateful night. And every morning now, I rush eagerly into the office to scan the outpourings of this poetic cockroach. And a new world has opened for me.
I write about the big city from the underside. Freddy the Mouse and Broadway the Lightning Bug and Mehitabel the Cat. Mehitabel, Mehitabel, queen of all the creatures of the night, with a soul too gay and a conscience too frail.
I saw her just the other evening, boss. She was tossing a party in Shinbone Alley for six of the toughest tabbies in town. Flirting their tails in the moonlight.
Yeah. What do we care if we're down and out? There's a dance or two in the old girls' yet. We'll whirl and prance like gay to dance. There's a dance or two in the old girls' yet.
Well, boss, that's Mehitable for you. Her left ear is ragged, there are lumps on her hide, and she limps on her hind leg on the starboard side. Though life always treats her in the same ugly way, yet she sings as she dances, toujours gay, toujours gay.
It's cheerio, my deario, there's life in me yet. Choose your gay, 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 choose your gay.
You know, boss, sometimes I think Mehitable is too choose your gay.
Choose your gay? There's no such thing as two choose your gay. Why, you foolish cockroach. You're a queer little insect who wheedles and begs with too many morals and too many legs. Sometimes when you preach and you talk through your hat, you make me so mad I could just stomp you flat. And yet I must confess, it's kind of nice to know there is someone in this cold, cruel world who worries about Mehitabel. So even if it's only a blue-nosed, stiff-necked, ugly-faced, know-it-all little cockroach. Well, cha-cha, Archie.
Good night, Mehitabel.
Poor Archie. He tries so hard and accomplishes so little. And yet every night he's back here at the typewriter, pouring out his heart and wisdom to an indifferent world. He writes of many things. Philosophy.
People may think they amount to a great deal, boss. But to a mosquito, they're just something to eat.
Politics.
The human race may be doing the best it can, but that's an explanation, not an excuse.
Ethics.
Honesty is a good thing, boss, but it is not profitable unless kept strictly under control.
Nature study.
The honeybee is sad and cross and wicked as a weasel, and when she perches on you, boss, she leaves a little measles.
But most of all, he writes about Mehitabel the cat.
Boss, I wish Mehitabel would settle down. I saw her again the other night, digging in a trash heap. And she looked as if she were part of that heap herself. But her eyes were flickering with a bright green flame. I told her to take a job as a house cat, boss, but she just laughed.
Oh, Archie, why talk about mundane things? I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love.
Oh, Mehitabel, not again.
What's the matter, little cockroach? Do you object to love?
Suddenly staring down at me was the biggest, blackest, meanest tomcat in the whole wide world.
Or perhaps my fat little cockroach, you object to me,
He leaned so very, very close, and suddenly I didn't object to anything.
Archie, dear, this is my bill, my own true love. This is the real thing at last.
At last I find my real romance through the process of trial and error. My skull is ditched from 100 fights, and I got little hair on my tail.
But the son of a gun of a yowl and hun is indubitably male.
Indubitably.
Over the fence we frolic and prance under the blood red moon, and we sing to the stars. We are Venus and Mars as we caper and clutch and croon.
His good eye gleams like a coal of hell from the Mercury Alley yard.
And the heart that jumps in the cage of my ribs is hot and black and hard.
Pussies that purr on a Persian rug or mew to some fool for cream, meow. Little you know of the wild delight of the midnight outlaw's dream.
A fish that fills from a garbage can or a milk bottle rated at dawn is better than safety or slavery. You punch that cuddling fawn. We'll riot across the roof of the world.
My hit above.
And Bill,
you're a son of a gun of a
yowling hun. There's a dance in the old bell stage.
The next morning, I came to the office early, and there was Archie, holding his head dejectedly with 4 of his legs. He had typed the following message.
Boss, it's no use. I tried to make Mehitabel respectable, but she just wouldn't listen. She ran off with that big, black-hearted tomcat.
For the next few weeks, Archie wrote no more about Mehetabel. He tried to lose himself in his work. He even wrote up one of his adventures in song.
Last night I met a lightning bug who just got into town. He flashed and flickered mightily as he flew up and down. And all the insects gathered round and cheered and urged him on. He said, "I am a wonderful bug. You'll miss me when I'm gone." We nicknamed him Broadway Boss. But then he got so very vain, he sneered at us and snickered. He said, "I bet you've never seen a bug before who flickered." I said to him, "Though you may think you are a natural wonder, I've watched your lightning all night long, but I don't hear no thunder." I guess that took him down a peg, boss.
But Archie's false cheer didn't fool me. I knew he was still brooding about Mehetabel. Then one dark, rainy night, the inevitable happened. Archie's note was brief and excited.
"Boy, she's back. Mehetabel is back in Shinbone Alley. I hate to say I told you so, but that good-for-nothing Bill has left her, and she's alone."
And the next night...
Well, she's not exactly alone, boys. There's a flock of kittens with her. Three of them this time. She's keeping them in an abandoned garbage can near the river. Last night her cronies were there to welcome her back again. You should have seen them fussing over the kittens.
Look at the pretty, 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 see the pretty, pretty, pretty kittens.
Oh, Archie. What have I done to deserve all these brats? Not that I don't love the cursed things.
My little kid.
But why does life have to be one darn litter after another?
Go to sleep in the ash.
After all, Archie, I'm an artist. This constant parade of kittens interferes with my career.
Mother love will.
It's not that I'm shy on mother love, Archie.
While you slumber and dream,
my heart would bleed if anything happened to them, and I found it out.
Lullaby, hush-a-by, while you're safe in the ash.
But it isn't fair. The eternal struggle between life and art is simply wearing me out.
Mother dear, we'll be hustling for fish heads and cream. Lullaby.
Of course, the poor dear ones will suffer so.
Go to sleep
in this veil of tears.
Mother love.
Sometimes I think the kindest thing would be to carry them over to the river and drop them in.
Lullaby.
But a mother's love is so unreasonable. Something always keeps me from doing it. I will make a home for the little innocents. Unless, of course, Providence should remove them.
Mehetabel, don't say things like that.
As you can see, Archie, I have them in this ash can without a cover. And should it rain before I could rescue them, the little dears might founder.
Mehetabel. Bell, it's raining now. It's been raining for hours and hours.
What did you say, Archie?
Mehitabel, it's pouring. You have to rescue the kittens.
Archie, I can't hear a word you're saying.
Mehitabel, get your children out of the ash can. They're practically floating away. Mehitabel, Mehitabel.
Oh, my kittens. Oh, my darling, darling kittens. Let us hurry and rescue them.
Mehitabel, we made it. We rescued your kittens in the nick of time.
Well, Archie, you are a true friend and a hero. But sometimes I wish I had a true friend who wouldn't mind his own business. Scat, you nosy little cockroach. Scat, get away, get out of my sight.
I practically had to run for my life. It was a funny way to thank a fellow. But then I suppose all females are a little illogical.
From that night on, Archie worked tirelessly to change Mehitable's ways, and he finally succeeded. Perhaps it was the desertion of the big black Tom, or the new litter of kittens, or the coming of winter to the city. But suddenly, Mehitable surrendered. She agreed to take a job as a house cat.
I'll do it. By gosh, I'll do it. That cockroach may be on the nosy side, but he's a brainy little fellow at that.
So she took the list of clients Archie had given her, swept up her basket of kittens, and started on the big adventure.
Are you the people who are in the market for a house cat? Of course, I'll have to see your references.
So the door closed behind Mehitabel, and a new life opened for her. I was certain this dramatic turn of events would make Archie happy, but strangely enough, he didn't look happy. As the peaceful weeks rolled by, he became more and more uneasy and fidgety, even sad. He began to take long walks alone at night.
My tired, lonely feet, and dream about my friend Mehitabel, Mehitabel, the way she used to be. And in the darkness, how I long to hear the wild, unconquered song that used to mock my friend Mehitabel, my raggle-taggle friend so wild and free. I changed it to a tabby with a ribbon round her neck. I gave her food and took away her pride. And now she sits before the fire in a warm and cozy room, but the fire in her eye has died. A cockroach cockroach should not ever be the one to play with destiny. I'm weeping for my friend, my Hittabel, the way she used to be. Oh, if only I could see her now, the way she used to be. Her left ear was ragged, there were lumps on her hide, and she limped on her hind leg on the starboard side. Though life always treated her in the same ugly way, yet she sang as she danced, "Tous your gay, tous your gay."
What's that?
Choose your gay, choose your gay.
It can't
be! Choose your gay, choose your gay, choose your gay.
I must be dreaming! It's Mehitabel!
It's cheerio, my deario, Prince and Kittlehead. It's cheerio, my deario, there's life in me yet. Choose
and
your
look,
gay,
all the stray
gay,
cats are pouring
gay,
out to welcome her home!
Choose your gay, choose your gay, choose your gay!
And look at them all yowling and cheering as Mehitabel dances on the coal cobble and the wind blows through her frozen whiskers.
Blow wind out of the north, but there's life in the old dame yet. Wind, come out of the north and kiss to the guts within. But someday my head of a gut will string a violin.
Whirl, head of a whirl, can't friend shake a leg. Whatever little blood is left will fizz like wine in a cake. You got a place to sleep.
Whistle to north wind on my hollow bones. I'll dance the time with three good feet here on the alley stones. There is life in the old dame, yeah.
Whirl, Mehitabel, whirl, and show your shadow how. Tonight it's danced with the bloody moon, tomorrow the garbage scowl. Dance, Mehitabel, dance. Spin, Mehitabel, spin. The wind will pipe on your marrow bones. Your ribs are a mandolin.
Not eat tomorrow, and I did not eat today. My belly's thin, but still I grin. The whole word is two's your gay. Be a family cat if you want someone's pussy and pet. But the life I lead is the life I like. There is pep in the old dame, yeah.
Spin, head about spin. Leap, head about leap. You gotta dance till the sun comes up, cause you got to sleep.
Boss, we mustn't blame Mehitabel for being what she has to be, because I think what she is just plain wonderful. And I'm proud to call her my friend, Mehitabel.
Mehitabel, Mehitabel.
There was the drama of Archie and Mehitabel. You can find more stories and poems online, of course. You can find more stories and poems online, of course, and see excerpts of a stage production of this drama on YouTube. But it's getting late now, coming up to midnight, in fact. Time for all of us respectable people who have abandoned the alley cat life to be heading off to sleep. And I thought we'd do this by listening to a reading of Dr. Seuss's sleep book. The book was written in 1962, and when I was young, I found an LP recording of the book, which I have since digitized. I'm afraid I don't know who is reading the book. But he gives it, I think, the right kind of homely American gee-whiz tone, but with a knowing smile also. The background music and other accompaniment work in well. It's a shame you can't see the pictures, bizarre, as usual, with Dr. Seuss. But maybe having to create your own pictures in your imagination will make this reading even more surreal. Watch out for the Funa Laguna Babuna, one of my favorites, and don't be too alarmed by the audio telio talio count, a kind of intrusive big brother machine which pries into everyone's bedroom in order to count up how many people are now asleep. The invasion of privacy is so absurd that we need not be afraid, and remember, Dr. Seuss was always campaigning for human decency and individualism. Inside the cover of this book is the warning, "This book is to be read in bed." But if you're not in bed, don't worry. I myself listened to this in the car the other day and made it safely down the A14. And I'll sign off now, reminding you that you've been listening to Evening Under Lamplight with Robert Louis Abrahamson on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. Remember the archives at momentsunderlamplight.com and reach me at rla@momentsunderlamplight.com. See you next time. And now let's snuggle down with Dr. Seuss's sleep book.
The news just came in from the county of Keck that a very small bug by the name of Van Vleck is yawning so wide you can look down his neck. This may not seem very important, I know, but it is, so I'm bothering telling you so. A yawn is quite catching, you see, like a cough. It just takes one yawn to start other yawns off. Now the news has come in that some friends of Van Vleck's are yawning so wide you can look down their necks. At this moment, right now, under seven more noses, great yawns are in blossom. They're blooming like roses. The yawn of that one little bug is still spreading. According to latest reports, it is heading across the wide fields through the sleepy night air, across the whole country toward every which where. And people are gradually starting to say, "I feel rather drowsy. I've had quite a day." Creatures are starting to think about rest. Two Bifferbaum birds are now building their nest. They do it each night. And quite often, I wonder how they do this big job without making a blunder. But that is their problem, not yours and not mine. The point is, they're going to bed, and that's fine. Sleep thoughts are spreading throughout the whole land. The time for night brushing of teeth is at hand. Up at Herkheimer Falls, where the great river rushes and crashes down crags in great gargling gushes, the Herkheimer sisters are using their brushes. Those falls are just grand for toothbrushing beneath, if you happen to be up that way with your teeth. The news just came in from the castle of Krupp that the lights are all out and the drawbridge is up. And the old drawbridge drawer just said with a yawn,
"My drawbridge is drawn, and it's going to stay drawn till the milkman delivers the milk about dawn. I'm going to bed now. So nobody better come round with a special delivery letter."
The number of sleepers is steadily growing. Bed is where more and more people are going. In Culpeper Springs, in the Stiltwalkers' Hall, the Stiltwalker's stilts are all stacked on the wall. The Stiltwalker walkers have called it a day. They're all tuckered out, and they're snoozing away. This is very big news. It's important to know. And that's why I'm bothering telling you so. Way out in the west, in the town of Merced, the Hinklehorn Honking Club just went to bed. Every horn has been quietly hung on a hook for the night in its own private Hinklehorn nook. All this long, happy day, they've been honking about, and the Hinklehorn honkers have honked themselves out. But they'll wake up quite fresh in the morning, and then they'll start right in Hinklehorn honking again. Everywhere, creatures are falling asleep. The collapsible Frink just collapsed in a heap. And by adding the Frink to the others before, I am able to give you the Who's Asleep score. Right now, 40,404 creatures are happily, deeply in slumber. I think you'll agree that's a whopping fine number. Counting up sleepers? Just how do we do it? Really quite simple. There's nothing much to it. We find out how many, we learn the amount by an audio-telio-talio count. On a mountain halfway between Reno and Rome, we have a machine in a plexiglass dome which listens and looks into everyone's home. And whenever it sees a new sleeper go flop, it jiggles and lets a new biggle ball drop. Our chap counts these balls as they plop in a cup. And that's how we know who is down and who's up. Do you talk in your sleep? It's a wonderful sport. And I have some news of this sport to report. The world champion sleep talkers, Joe and Mo Redzoff, have just gone to sleep. And they're talking their heads off.
I can't tell you, there's a gauze in one, there's a cross, and there's a cross. And out of the world, there's a gauze, there's a gauze, and a cross. And there's flaws in that gauze. I can't tell you, there's a pause in every place. And I never worry either, because there's a gauze and a pause in a gauze.
For 55 years now, each chattering brother has babbled and gabbled all night to the other. They've talked about laws, and they've talked about gauze, they've talked about paws, and they've talked about flaws, they've talked quite a lot about old Santa Claus. And the reason I'm telling you this is because you should take up this sport. It's just fine for the jaws. Do you walk in your sleep? I just had a report of some interesting news of this popular sport. Near Finnegan Fen, there's a sleepwalking group which not only walks, but it walks a la hoop. Every night they go miles. Why, they walk to such length they have to keep eating to keep up their strength. So every so often, one puts down his hoop, stops hooping, and does some quick snooping for soup. That's why they are known as the Hoop Soup Snoop Group. Sleepwalking, too, are the curious Crandalls, who sleepwalk on hills with assorted-sized candles. The Crandalls walk nightly in slumbering peace, in spite of slight burns from the hot dripping grease. The Crandalls wear candles because they walk far, and if they wake up, want to see where they are. Now the news has arrived from the Valley of Vale that a Chippendale mup has just bitten his tail, which he does every night before shutting his eyes. Such nipping sounds silly, but really it's wise. He has no alarm clock, so this is the way he makes sure that he'll wake at the right time of day. His tail is so long, he won't feel any pain till the nip makes the trip and gets up to his brain. In exactly 8 hours, the Chippendale Mupp will at last feel the bite and yell, "Ouch!" and wake up. And Mr. and Mrs. J. Carmichael Crocs have just gone to bed near the town of Fort Knox. And they, by the way, have the finest of clocks. I'm not at all sure that I quite understand just how the thing works with that one extra hand. But I do know this clock does one very slick trick. It doesn't tick-tock. How it goes is tock-tick. So with ticks in its tocker and tocks in its ticker, it saves lots of time and the sleeper sleep quicker. What a fine night for sleeping. From all that I hear, it's the best night for sleeping in many a year. They're even asleep in the Zwieback Motel, and people don't usually sleep there too well. The beds are like rocks, and as everyone knows, the sheets are too short. They won't cover your toes. So, if people are actually sleeping in there, it's a great night for sleeping. It must be the air. It's a great night for snores. I just had a report of some boys who are tops in this musical sport. The snortiest snorers in all our fair land are Snorter MacPhail and his Snora Snort Band. This band can snore Dixie and old Swanee River so loud it would make 40 elephants shiver. The loudest of all of the boys is MacPhail. He snores with his head in a 3-gallon pail. So they snore in a cave 20 miles out of town. If they snored closer in, they would snore the town down. Do you know who's asleep out in Funa Laguna? Two very nice Funa Laguna babuna. We've added them into our who's asleep count, which has grown to a really amazing amount. Exactly 8,808 creatures are sleeping now. Isn't that great? A Jed is in bed. And the bed of a Jed is the softest of beds in the world, it is said. He makes it from pom-poms he grows on his head. And he's sleeping right now on the softest of fluff. Completely exhausted from growing the stuff. The news has come in from the district of Doft that two Oft are asleep and they're sleeping aloft. And how are they able to sleep off the ground? I'll tell you. I weighed one last week and I found that an Oft is so light he weighs -1 pound. A moose is asleep. He is dreaming of moose drinks. A goose is asleep. He is dreaming of goose drinks. That's well and good when a moose dreams of moose juice. And nothing goes wrong when a goose dreams of goose juice. But it isn't too good when a moose and a goose start dreaming they're drinking the other one's juice. Moose juice, not goose juice, is juice for a moose. And goose juice, not moose juice, is juice for a goose. So when goose gets a mouthful of juices of mooses and moose gets a mouthful of juices of gooses, they always fall out of their bed screaming screams. So, I'm warning you now. Never drink in your dreams. Speaking of dreaming, I think you should note that the Bumble Tub Club is now dreaming afloat. Every night they go dreaming down Bumble Tub Creek. Except for one night every third or fourth week when they stop for repairs, cause their bumble tubs leak. But tonight, they're afloat, full of dreams, full of bliss. And that's why I'm bothering telling you this. At the fork of a road in the Vale of Vavod, 5-foot-weary salesmen have laid down their load. All day they've raced round in the heat at top speeds, unsuccessfully trying to sell Zizzerzoof seeds, which nobody wants because nobody needs. Tomorrow will come. They'll go back to their chore. They'll start on the road Zizzerzoofing once more. But tonight they've forgotten their feet are so sore. And that's what the wonderful nighttime is for. Everywhere creatures have shut off their voices. They've all gone to bed in the beds of their choices. They're sleeping in bushes. They're sleeping in crannies, some on their stomachs and some on their fannies. They're peacefully sleeping in comfortable holes, some even on soft-tufted barbershop poles. The number of sleepers is now past the millions. The number of sleepers is now in the billions. They're sleeping on steps and on strings and on floors, in mailboxes, ships, and the keyholes of doors. Every worm on a fishhook is safe for the night. Every fish in the sea is too sleepy to bite. Every whale in the ocean has turned off his spout. Every light between here and far Foodle is out. And now, adding things up, we are way beyond billions. Our Who's Asleep score is now up in the zillions. 99,009,002,000,000,002 creatures are sleeping. So, how about you? When you put out your light, then the number will be 99,009,003,000,003. Good night.